Hey, welcome to today's podcast. Got a great, great podcast lined up for you.
Wouldn't you love to watch these broadcasts as they happen? You can do that if you happen to be a subscriber to Blaze TV.
Yeah, but then you only get the Glenn Beck podcast.
No, you also get Pat Gray Unleashed.
Shut up.
You also get The News and Why It Matters.
Mark Levin.
Mark Levin. Oh, Stephen Crowder.
Oh, how about Eric Bowling?
Eric Bowling. Alan Stuckey.
Goodness.
I mean, John Miller. You've got a lot of really great content. Graham Allen's on there. I mean, there's a lot. Yep. Check it out. The subscription is very cost effective, I believe. You can get, I think it's $10 off right now if you use the promo code Beck when you go to blazetv.com/Beck.
Okay, so on today's podcast, we've got three topics that we want to hit. The first one is about the economy. And we had a guy on, he's from the Von Mises Institute. He took the theory of skyscrapers. When a record skyscraper is built, the economy crashes. And he looked and went back in history to the beginning of skyscrapers, really in the late 1800s, and tried to find, is that true? He found the pattern to be true, and then he explains why. Now, that was fascinating. But the biggest skyscraper breaking all records was supposed to have its ribbon cut in November. It's going to be cut now, but he says it's already there. We are already now in the skyscraper curse. When we asked him, how bad do you think it's going to be, category of storm, he said category 6. When I followed it up and said, what would you describe the Great Depression as? You need to hear the answer.
Amazing. We also talked to a former Border Patrol chief. This is a guy who was in there in the Obama administration.
And was actually ousted by Trump.
Ousted by the Trump administration. However, he's speaking out now and saying, you know what? Trump is completely right on the wall. We need it. That's great. We also have Andrew Heaton as well, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Home Title Lock is our sponsor this half hour. This is the number one growing crime in America, with according to the FBI, with people actually stealing your house.
Yeah, well, and you know, and most importantly, they steal the equity behind it. You know, you're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars you have in equity potentially in a home, especially if you have an elderly relative or you just happen to have your house paid off. By the way, congratulations on that. But thieves can come and take that equity, take out big home equity loans, and then you get stuck with the bills. You do not want to try to unwind a problem like this. No bank, no identity theft program, no insurance is going to protect you. Do what I did, do what Glenn has done. Sign up for Home Title Lock. They put this barrier around your home's title and mortgage. And if somebody tries to screw with you, they help shut it down for you. It's a $100 search they have for free to make sure you're not already in trouble with this. HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com is the place to go.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So when I was at Fox, I told you the Arab Spring would spread. It would destabilize the Middle East, bringing the rise of a new caliphate. And then it would spread to Europe. Members of the right and the left would use that chaos to their own advantage, and it would eventually spread to the United States. Well, that is done now. I mean, we are talking about the border. What is it that Hillary Clinton just went over to Europe and said was the biggest problem with the destabilization of Europe? Migrants.
Yeah.
Remember?
Which is amazing for her to admit.
Right. Yeah. They caused it. Those migrants came from the Arab Spring and the caliphate. So you had a crisis. You had to get them out. What are we debating now? We're debating a crisis and immigration. So the left tells Europe, wow, you guys shouldn't have done that. But they're still telling America, you should do that. Doesn't make any sense. So that's complete now. So what happens next? In this year of shows, we're going to be concentrating on 8 categories, and I want to spend some time today working on these 8 categories and explaining them to you, and then we're going to take phone calls for the TV show today. So if you have any questions or ideas or thoughts, please share them at 888-727-BECK for TV at 5 o'clock. It's live 5 p.m. Eastern time. And you can call that number. I recommend that you call a few minutes early, and that way you're kind of guaranteed a spot. All right. So what's going to happen next? Well, I don't think any of these things are going to come as a surprise to you, but it's what we need to concentrate on. The polarization is going to get worse. This is the political polarization, not just here in America, but all around the world. The polarization is going to get worse, and it's going to cause more riots in the streets, more unrest. Civil unrest is coming. And you're going to see again the left and the right coming together because their purposes will be to collapse things. So polarization is going to get worse. The economies will then nosedive. Now, these could be out of order. The economies could nosedive and then polarization gets worse. But the financial system is going to be in danger again. Some countries will collapse, like Germany collapsed in the 1930s. Oil and the petrodollar will be weakened, putting countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia into economic chaos. And this, as this happens, you add in to it tech causing downward pressure on jobs and wages and communications and education. And this will add more pressure on countries like the United States and China. And at some point, because of all of these things, people will no longer believe in any system. The government, the tech sector, press, all of it will be discredited. That's when things get really dicey. And that's when things like the government and tech begin to merge with each other. Now, I've laid out on the last three radio shows the sectors that we're going to be watching. And because they're all dominoes. And I want to go over some of them with you because I want to ask you if you are, if you have experience or you would consider yourself well-informed on a few topics and you could help us look for stories and connections. We need you to do that. And you can sign up and be part of our team, if you will, at research@glennbeck.com. That's research@glennbeck.com. And we'll give you some of these categories. But for instance, I'm not an expert on AI, but I'm very well read on it. And if I were just a listener, I'd be like, oh no, I know a lot of stuff and I watch that sector. You know, I can contribute stories because I see stories that are never making it into the mainstream. And I understand how that connects to the future. You know, I am very fascinated with Russia, and so I watch that, and I see things that are never in mainstream. We want you to be a part of the team that just would contribute things to us from time to time so it's on our radar. And again, you can do that by sending stories to research@glennbeck.com. I want to give you a story that happened yesterday that explains exactly why all of these are need to be watched and how any of these eight different categories can tie in and be the catalyst for collapse and true chaos, and global war. Going to give you a story that just was announced or just happened yesterday during this show. If you've been following the French Yellow Vest protests, well, let me just assume that maybe you haven't. The Yellow Vest protests started just recently because the Yellow Vests were upset about a fuel tax. That fuel tax was being imposed on the citizens of France, and it was to pay for all the global warming nonsense. Well, the people were for the global warming, you know, we got to stop global warming. But then once that tax actually hit them, they were like, well, no, wait a minute. Hang on just a second. You don't tax us. And so they wanted that tax removed. And so they started these what are called yellow vest protests. And it about 1,000 people have been injured. Hundreds have been arrested. Several people have died. It's been ugly in France. Well, Macron came out and he said, okay, we're taking away the tax. Well, that just showed the people on the streets, the radicals, not the average people, but the radicals that were leading it. Ah, they blinked. We can get them. Now, I want you to think of the people who are wearing the yellow vests. Most of them are just like you. The ones who are leading it are more like Antifa, more like Occupy Wall Street. What's happened is, after he blinked, the left and the right got together. Again, not coordinated. They're not on each other's side. But they both want to tear the system down.
I mean, because you say the leadership's like Occupy Wall Street, but one of the big things they fought about initially was repealing the horrible gas tax that was bankrupting a bunch of French citizens because they were paying triple, basically, the old gas prices.
Correct.
So it was not necessarily just a left-wing movement to start. It's that the people are now seeing that opportunity and grabbing control, right?
Correct. Okay. Correct. So now what you have here is a movement that is now being copied all over Europe. This is happening in Sweden. This is happening in Germany. This is happening in Belgium. It's happening all over Europe. It was happening in England. This is a national movement in France that now has 70% approval rating. Well, yesterday they announced that they want to collapse the bank and they want to collapse the euro. And so they are asking this weekend to go in, have French citizens go in and take at least 20% of their cash out of their bank, transfer it out of the euro and into Bitcoin. If there was a movement here in America that had a 70% approval rating, and they could convince 70% of 50% of this population to take 20% of their money out of banks, that would be a real, real problem for America. This could be one of the things that collapses the euro, that collapses the economy over in Europe. I don't know if it will be. But this one story has everything in it that I'm looking for and is a good explainer on how these things can happen. Political polarization, the distance between the media and the government, that friction between them has caused polarization. They don't trust their government anymore. They don't trust the banking system anymore. They don't trust any politician anymore. So it has bubbled over and it went into street riots. Then they're using this power to buckle the economy. This could bring the entire system down. But what happens next? Let me focus on that. And the eight categories that you need to be aware of. We're talking about what is coming and how we want to focus this show. And I want to bring you in quickly on what we're looking for, because I look at you as a partner on being able to chart a course for either the greatest freedom, health, and wealth the world has ever seen in this next page and chapter of human history, that I think we are now on the bridge. We are in a year from now, you're going to be standing on the other side of the bridge and everybody's going to see this, I think, clearly. But we're moving so fast and we're not educating or even including the average citizen in some big topics. We're all just concentrating on what CNN said and what Fox do and what did Trump tweet? That's meaningless stuff. So I want to give you eight categories that we are going to really focus on and try to put the world into context and show you what leads to a collapse and totalitarianism and what leads to freedom. So the first category we talked about was civility and chaos. It's important to look for, you know, the goodness index and charity and faith and religion where it's working. But it's also really important to look at civil unrest and war and instability and those who are preaching chaos. For instance, Iran and Russia, now Cuba and Venezuela. Politics of meaning. Things that really, truly matter. Tweets don't matter. Tweets do not matter. But what the president is doing with the trade war in China matters, but not for reasons that most people even understand. that arrest in Canada of the Chinese CEO, that was the thing that opened it up for me. And I went, oh my gosh, this is what's really going on. And you need to understand that. Also, money and how money is going to change, how jobs and employment is going to change, our debt, our personal debt, our credit card debt, European debt, banking, banking scandals, the way governments are going to start trapping people's money. I bet you don't even know that your money has really been trapped. If the bank collapses here in America, you're not getting your money out. They're going to give it to you. You know, the government will guarantee it, but you're not getting your money out because the banks have changed the rules. I think you watch this weekend to see if France starts to trap people's savings and their checking accounts in their banks this weekend. The next category would be education. What are the jobs of the future? What are the education alternatives? How about entrepreneurship, home education, the goals of Common Core? Common Core changed names, but the goals remain. Medicine. Medicine, we have to look at it in a couple of ways, both positive and negative. Socialized medicine versus the free market. New ideas on how to provide healthcare cheaper, high-tech healthcare. Things that will that we have to decide whether they're good or bad. For instance, Humana healthcare, giving away a free Apple Watch if you just sign up. Well, that's great. Well, they're what they want is the information from your wrist. Are you exercising? Are you standing when it says stand? Are you moving? And that will become more and more intrusive. Well, it's good for the free market. Is it good for your privacy? Also, with things like CRISPR and the complete lives system, that is coming, and we're already seeing it in Great Britain. We have to talk about ethics. Ethics also plays a big role in the next category, and that is high tech. Surveillance, AI, AGI, ASI, the game changers. The biggest game changer on the near horizon is 5G. When that happens, you better understand why that's a game changer. And that plays right into China. But things like empathy with technology, which are the first jobs to go? By 2020, you're going to start seeing sincere, significant job losses, permanent job losses, for instance, in trucking. Media is the next topic, the old versus the new. This is where the disenfranchisement really happens. What is the old media talking about, and what are people actually talking about? The deplatforming and digital ghettoization of the politically incorrect, which leads to the last topic, and that is something I call the United Corporations of America. Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft. Who are they buying? Who are they destroying? What are they building? Who are they hiring? Who are they merging with? What are they lobbying for right now? I think it's really important that the people who are for net neutrality, did you know that it was Google that wrote that law? Why would Google be interested in that? Are they really just for you? What are their actions overseas, especially in China? Who are they silencing and deplatforming online? And who's advising them on what hate speech really is? The creepy line, the partnership with government. Those are the things that we have to concentrate on. We're not going to give you all of the day-to-day little things other than like what we just did with Donald Trump walking out of the meeting yesterday. We could dissect that for an hour. But is it worth more? If you're looking for meaning, is it worth more than this explanation? Pat, welcome to the program. You walk into a store, you're buying a house, and you walk into the real estate agent, and they have a whole list that, oh, I've got so many houses to show you today. Good. Do you have houses that are all under $1 million? No, I don't have a single house that's, you know, they're all $3 million plus. Are you somehow or another being insincere by not saying, well, I can't afford that. I told you specifically we wanted a house under $1 million. I'm leaving. Is that somehow wrong?
No.
So how is it wrong that the president said, this is a condition, I must have a wall? Now, we can talk about everything else, but in the end, I must have a wall. And if you say no, well, why should he waste any time?
Which is what he said.
Right.
It's a complete waste of time.
Right. That's not a temper tantrum.
No.
That's what you do in your life. That's politics of meaning. Those are the ways we need to start looking at things this year and having conversations.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So I have always been fascinated by the skyscraper curse, and it is, I've never really looked into it like you did. Your book is absolutely fascinating. Can you explain what the theory is first?
Well, the basic theory is that when a record-setting skyscraper is built anywhere in the world, by the time it's completed and ready to open, the world is going to be experiencing an economic crisis. And so the curse is the economic crisis that is associated with the building of a record-setting skyscraper.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, it was the Woolworth Building around 1914, 1915, something like that, that does not fall into that category. And that was the world's first real kind of skyscraper.
Well, you know, we've been building taller and taller for about 150 years, and the skyscraper curse occurred earlier during the Panic of 1907, but as the Woolworth Building was being built and it was being redesigned to go even higher to set the record, and then when it set the record in 1913, there was no economic crisis that followed. And so the original architect of the skyscraper curse, a real estate analyst named Andrew Lawrence, he called the Woolworth Building a mistake of the skyscraper curse. But when I went in and looked at the detailed statistics, what I found is that the U.S. economy was going into a severe recession just as the Woolworth Building was being prepared to be opened in early 1914. But what Andrew Lawrence forgot or just neglected was the fact that World War I was starting in Europe, and all of the major powers of the world were getting ready for a war, and they were buying steel, they were buying grain, they were buying weapons, they were buying materials. And so that reactivated the U.S. economy and brought us out of what was one of the worst downturns in U.S. economic history.
Okay, so give me some, because I think it's fascinating. The Chrysler Building is completed. There's actually two skyscrapers. Donald Trump owns one of them now by Wall Street, and the Chrysler Building completed. We have the crash of 29. The Empire State Building's completed a year later in 1930, and we go into the Depression. In, what was it, 1970, the World Trade Center?
That's right. We were on a tremendous record-breaking business cycle boom during the 1960s. Economists from the Keynesian school thought that they had been able to do away with the business cycle, and business cycle courses were being taken out of the curriculum going into 1970 as the World Trade Tower 1 and 2 were being built and rising in New York City, soon to be followed by the Sears Tower in Chicago. And what happened was, just as all of this grandeur and glory for the Keynesians was reaching a pinnacle, the U.S. went into an economic crisis. We had the stagflation of 1970 through 1982. We had the U.S. Going off the gold standard. Things were so bad. We had wage and price controls being imposed by Richard Nixon in 1971, just as the trade towers were coming to a new record height. And so that was a spectacular, menacing sort of example of why we shouldn't trust Keynesian economics.
So before we get into what you see on the horizon, what I really appreciated was the theory on why this is happening. Now, there's another theory out there that, like, for instance, the Sears Tower. whenever you build a tower, and I think again, Woolworth was the exception to this. Whenever they build a record tower, that company is at its peak. It's all downhill from there. And you kind of can understand that because you're thinking, okay, well, they're arrogant now. But the way you look at this skyscraper and the things that you say, why this happens makes total sense. So can you explain your theory on why this is true, why it happens?
Well, you know, the people who build these buildings, they may be arrogant, and their arrogance may have risen as a result of the position that they've risen to. But basically, the underlying cause of all this is cheap credit, low interest rates, artificially low interest rates from the central bank or our Federal Reserve. And those low interest rates, in the short run, cause people to, you know, invest more, invest in long-term projects, invest in big, spectacular projects, because, you know, the credit is cheap. They're making profits. Everybody seems to be doing well. And so the Fed can create a rosy economic scenario in the short run, but what it's really doing is causing people to make the wrong investments in the economy, to go beyond what would otherwise be economically rational. And so the number one signal, the number one price in any economy is the interest rate. And when the Fed cooks the books and reduces that interest rate for economic, political, or whatever reason they do it for, if they do it too long and too far, ultimately they're going to create mal investments or bad investments like record-setting skyscrapers, which otherwise would never have been built.
So it's interesting. It's not necessarily because it's an example of hubris, or it's certainly not the cause of the economic trouble. It's a symptom of something.
It's of somebody else's hubris. The central banks.
That's interesting.
Dr. Mark Thornton is going to continue with us here in just a second. The skyscraper curse. So the author of The Skyscraper Curse, Dr. Mark Thornton, is on with us on the Glenn Beck program. And you say that the skyscraper curse is real because of low interest rates that the Fed has kind of cooked the books on. We are now coming out of a place with the lowest interest rates for the longest period of time in the history of our country and maybe the history of the world. What does that say on what's coming?
Well, Glenn, it's scary to me. As you said, this is an unprecedented financial environment that we've just left, and of zero interest rates, never happened in human history. And that's the background. Well, that's the background for all corporations who, you know, what their financial structure is dependent upon an environment of low interest rates. And so as we leave this environment of ultra low interest rates, you can expect a lot of those bad investments, which we can't necessarily pinpoint right now. But as we go forward, a lot of those investments that people have been making in real estate, in technology, in social media, a lot of that is going to be revealed. And I think we're starting to see this in the business news, where profit expectations haven't been met, revenue expectations haven't been met, cost of production have risen unexpectedly for a lot of firms. And so when your revenues are coming down, your accounts receivable are backing up, and your cost of production are rising, the profits disappear and the losses start to reveal themselves. And then, of course, you have companies that are going to have to react to that with restructuring, with bankruptcy, with foreclosures. And I think this is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just the U.S., the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, of course, is still at it, really. They haven't yet started retrenching. And central banks around the world have had to match those policies to protect their currencies, or at least to balance their currencies. And so this is not just a U.S. phenomenon. It's a U.S.-led phenomenon, but it's going to impact the entire world. The people in the know realize that there's corporations all around the globe particularly in the U.S., in Europe, in Japan, in China, which are very, very vulnerable. And we can expect over the next 2 years for this crisis really to take hold. I think we're just seeing the leading edges of it right now. And, you know,
if this were a storm that's if this is a storm that's headed our way, put it in a category one through five.
I would say it's a category six. You know, the silver lining here is that this is going to be a very bad economic crisis, in my opinion. I think the empirical information is following that opinion. And the silver lining is that we may have an opportunity to get the world back on a gold standard or some other more sound monetary system.
They will tell you, Mark. I have talked to people in banking and very high up in economics, and they all believe the same crap that they all learned in the same schools. But they'll tell you that there's no way the world can afford the lifestyle that we have with the gold standard. That's why we got off it. We had to buy more stuff. We wanted more stuff. We wanted a great society. We wanted welfare. We wanted two cars. We wanted all that. We can't do it with gold standard. What do you say to that?
Well, we can do it with the gold standard. The gold standard is what the world, we left the world of animals and wandering around, and we discovered sound money, silver coins, and Western civilization began to take hold a few thousand years ago. So this is a brief time, and we need to learn the lesson that sound money, which is independent of any political wishes, is the way to go. And I think we can see our way back in the coming crisis. So we can get rid of welfare. We can get rid of Social Security. We can get back on a monetary system that's sound and stable. And I think we have a great opportunity here in this economic crisis that's coming forth to return the world to more human-directed purpose rather than political purpose.
Mm. When you say Category 6, what category would you put the Great Depression in?
I would say that's a 5.
Hold on. You would say the Great Depression was a Category 5, and what is coming is a Category 6.
That's correct. And, one of the reasons the Great Depression became great is that FDR and even Herbert Hoover tried to solve it politically. They tried to spend their way out. They tried to inflate their way out. They wanted to, create all sorts of government jobs, which is the wrong thing to do. If you allow the free market to resolve an economic crisis, you can make it much shorter and much safer for people. And I think that we can reduce that Category 6 rating on this coming storm greatly if we were to be able to pursue a more traditional policy.
I mean, when we had Wilson that scared the hell out of people, followed by Harding and Coolidge and their recession, which was far steeper than 1929, and what led to the Great Depression. They solved that. That was over in like 18 months, but they stopped spending. You're in a situation now where the world thinks that socialism is the great answer. I mean, you're not really looking at a country that will say, you know what, we should all tighten our belts and we're in this together and let's all suffer together. We're going to do the opposite, don't you think?
I'm afraid we might, but I think that there is a way out. Harding set the standard. He required a balanced budget in a depression. He required that interest rates be increased rather than cut. And so the historical record is on our side.
Yeah.
The free market economics works.
Yes.
And the socialism that we employed in the New Deal did not work. The socialism in the Japanese bust in 1989 has not worked.
Yeah.
In almost three decades of pain over there and frustration. But the Keynesian doctrine has not worked. It's only made things worse. It's made economic crises
last a lot longer. So let me ask you this one last question. We've got only about a minute, and I could go on for a long time with you. you say that when these buildings are, the ribbon is cut, it's underway. Is there a building we're looking at now in the skyscraper curse that when this happens, you think that's the time?
Yes, there is, Glenn. They're building a record-setting skyscraper in Saudi Arabia out in the middle of the desert. It's planned to be a kilometer tall.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to set the record, the world record. And the only reason it hasn't set the world record already, it was scheduled to break the world record in November of 2018, and it wouldn't be complete. But only the corruption scandal in Saudi Arabia brought that project into a delay mode about a year ago. So it would have already set the record.
It's any time. You're looking at any time you think this could go.
I think it began in November of last year.
All right, Mark, thank you so much. A fascinating book. You should read it. Really good, solid research. It's called The Skyscraper Curse. The Skyscraper Curse by Dr. Mark Thornton from the Von Mises Institute. You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
So I'm tired of the he said, she said. I want somebody who's actually done the work. I want somebody who is not politically motivated. And in fact, if I can find somebody who's politically motivated, perhaps even in the other way, it wouldn't be bad if I could just get the facts. Mark Morgan is a career FBI official. He served as Border Patrol chief for the last 6 months of the Obama administration. He was ousted by President Trump at the beginning of his presidency. Prior to that, he was the assistant commissioner to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection and a police officer at LAPD. He served as a he served in the Marine Corps for 11 years. And I just want the facts on what's really happening on the border. I don't want political spin. Welcome to the program, Mark Morgan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
You bet. Can you run down and fact check some of the things that have been said about the border? And can you tell the American people what's really happening? What are we facing?
Yes, I can. And Glenn, I tell you, if as American people are listening, I mean, what you said in your opening is your introduction, which I appreciated, is exactly why I have broke my silence after all this time. As time went by, at first I wanted to give people deference that, hey, they were just misinformed or because they were viewing facts through their own individual political ideological lens that they were unintentionally, you know, misinforming people. But as time went by, you know, I don't say this with happiness, but I feel that there's actually some intent behind the distortion of the facts and what's out there.
Sure.
And that's why I broke my silence.
Okay.
And so I'll give you one example. If anyone says that the wall is ineffective, that they're simply misleading the American people. There are facts, historical data that shows that the wall, as part of a multi-layered approach of infrastructure, technology, and personnel, when those things coalesce together and they're provided effectively along the southwest border, Glenn, it works. And go to the facts. You know, there was an article that was just published by the Yuma County Sheriffs in Arizona that said when the wall, along with technology and personnel, came to his territory, he saw over a 90% reduction in immigration, and he saw overall crime in his territory reduced drastically. That is a fact. That's not made up. In the United States Border Patrol, when I go there, again, I was there. I don't understand why pundits are not listening to the experts. Look, you know, the president of the Border Patrol Council, Brandon Judd, and the current White House, you know, they didn't want me there and they removed me. And I'm here today, as you said, to say that they're right. And the reason why they're right is because they've got decades and decades and they've dedicated their entire life along the southwest border protecting our country. And they're out there saying that the wall works. He talked about Nogales, San Diego. We could go on and on forever where it is fact, Glenn. It's not political ideology. It's not twisting. That's the fact.
So yesterday the spin was from Nancy Pelosi. Well, they're just going to tunnel under the wall.
Yeah, that's Glenn, I tell you, I'm trying not to throw myself in the political arena. I think it's almost impossible to talk about this that issue without it being infused in politics. But that is a ridiculous statement. It is absolutely ridiculous.
Why?
So it twists the facts. Are tunnels used? Yes. Have tunnels been used? Are they successful? Yes. But Glenn, that is a minute problem. That is a small problem of the overall problem. And I can tell you that the Customs and Border Protection, specifically CBP, they're working every day to improve their ground sensor technology and tunnel technology, working with the Israel, et cetera, to improve that technology. So the argument is disingenuous. So because the bad guys changed their tactics, techniques, and procedures, therefore we should do away with other infrastructure that helps reduce the other techniques they use? I mean, you see, it doesn't make any sense.
Can you help me with, because I think this is a humanitarian crisis, because we are sending mixed signals all the time. People are sending their children over. The sex trade is just outrageous. The rape on women, you have a 30% chance if you're a woman, you're going with a mule, 30% chance of being raped. Can you describe how a wall is actually the humanitarian thing to do? Do you have any facts to go ahead?
Yes. And again, Glenn, you're 100% right. Everything that you just said, you're 100% right. And that's based on my experience, in fact, and the experience of a whole heck of a lot of other people who have been doing this a lot longer than I have. Because remember, as the FBI, I was in charge of the El Paso division. You know, from my office, I could see Juarez. So I lived it for 2 years and worked it for 2 years there right on the border. And I'm telling you, when I became chief of the Border Patrol, almost immediately, and this is back in 2016, almost immediately, you know what word I was using? Humanitarian crisis. And that was back in 2016. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2014 is when the onslaught of family units and then involved to the unaccompanied minors started. This is not a crisis that just happened today. It's a crisis that's been going on for a long time, and it is a dual-hatted. It's a national security and humanitarian crisis. And here's where the wall helps. So look, again, this is where it's disingenuous, too, when people want to try as a soundbite, say, well, the wall won't solve everything. That's absolutely correct, but guess what? No one has ever said that. There's not a single Border Patrol agent in the history of the Border Patrol or any leader within that agency that has ever said the wall works. But it is a significant part of the multi-layered approach. And here's where it will help everything that you just talked about. By building that wall, the infrastructure, technology, and personnel, what it's going to do is take away the avenue from the cartels and from the coyotes. They will no longer have the avenues to what I really think is a systematic abuse and torture of the people that they're bringing through this crack.
I agree.
Right? And especially what you just said. And this is what I don't understand the pundits, political side. Glenn, I don't understand. It's just what you said. These are young girls that are being smuggled as part of the human smuggling effort, and they're being forced into the sex trade and et cetera. It's horrendous. And to think that we would not support everything that the expert says we need to mitigate that and have a positive impact on that, I don't understand. You build that wall, you have the technology, you have the personnel, it takes away that avenue from the cartels and the coyotes. And now the only way that somebody can get in is through the points of entry. And that gives us a heck of a lot better shot.
Talk to Mark Morgan, former Border Patrol chief, was with the FBI for a long time, U.S. Marine Corps. So with the wall, this is something that a lot of people will bring up, Mark, is, you know, as you pointed out, tunnels could theoretically go under it. People could saw through it. They could climb over it. There are ways to get past walls. But the theory is, number one, you're going to get rid of the low-hanging fruit, right? People who don't want to do that. Two, you're going to delay anyone who's trying to attempt that so that Border Patrol can get there. And isn't it as well a sign, like, when you're in a country and you see pictures of the wall on television, there's a lot of people that'll be dissuaded just from knowing that the wall exists. Are those things accurate?
Again, Glenn, you know, you've done your homework and you've talked to a lot of people. Everything you just said is right. It's a deterrence. It's a delay. It affords the United States Border Patrol to use other operational tactics to secure the border. And let me mention something about the tunnel again, because, again, it's just an outrageous comment. So because there may be other methods to get around it, you don't want to build it. Again, it makes no sense. That defies common sense. And I know the American people are smarter than that. But let's talk about a tunnel just for example. It is used, but it's few, because you can imagine it takes a lot of time, energy, and effort to build a tunnel.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Something's Off with Andrew Heaton is the name of the podcast that you can hear daily with Andrew Heaton, and he joins us now.
Hello, thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. How was your holiday?
It was great. I went to Oklahoma for Christmas, mm-hmm, and I went camping in eastern Texas, mm-hmm, and I went up to New York to visit friends, so I had a great time.
Holy cow.
It was all over the board.
Yeah. How was the change from like Oklahoma to New York?
You know, okay, so I lived in New York for 6 years, and I think it's kind of like if you've been stuck in a car with someone for like 3 or 4 weeks, you have no patience whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That's how I was when I left New York. Mm-hmm. Coming back, though, I had rebuilt all of that deep breathing, and
yeah,
I was
you know,
able to handle it.
It's fine. It's a great place to visit.
Yeah.
You just don't want to be trapped, live there.
I think you can live there if you are very young or very hot or very rich, and I am smoking hot. But I don't have enough money to make it work long term. So that's.
Can I tell you something? When I was living there, I was very rich, and no. It makes it better, mm-hmm, but it still sucks.
Yeah. But do you need all three of those things? Because Glenn was rich, but certainly not young,
and certainly not hot.
And you obviously are very hot.
Yeah.
But you're not necessarily rich or young.
And I'm no longer. I'm 35 as of yesterday.
Yeah,
happy birthday. A quarter of my life is over now.
Yeah.
And
how old do you think you're gonna?
I'm very optimistic.
Yeah,
still. I'm not good at math, but I'm thinking like 120.
Oh wow.
That's my thought.
All right. Yeah, you're not good at math. One of these days you're gonna find somebody to share your life with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm working on that. I think
is this the year?
This could be the year.
This could be the year.
I'll
what are you looking for?
Two or three wives.
What are you looking?
I really like playful, goofy ladies, because I kind of want to joke around, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's a big deal. I like open-minded people, uh-huh, who are tolerant. I don't really like fighting. I'm not combative,
uh-huh,
and I have a lot of really weird friends. So whoever I wind up with has to be fairly porous to other ideas coming in.
Sure,
eclectic.
Yeah, that's.
But you fit in with us.
Yeah. I think I fit in here very well.
Yeah. And we're pretty eclectic.
That is an understatement, Glenn. I think eclectic is, yes, that is the minimum FDA regulation term that we have to use for this motley crew.
What would you say the actual term is? If eclectic is the minimum.
I mean, I don't know psychology that well, Glenn.
I'm sure there's some
kind of term for it.
All right. Let's start with France.
Okay.
France having riots. You're, mm-hmm, familiar with,
right,
the Yellow Vest riots.
That is their national pastime. So yes.
This was pretty serious. The 70% approval rating with these riots, and they just changed yesterday. About this time, they announced that.
Wait, I'm sorry. The 70% of the French population likes the riots.
Yeah, they side with the.
I thought the riots were like the top political thing.
No. They side with the people who are rioting.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
All right.
So the leadership came out and said, this weekend we want to try something new because we want direct democracy, which, as a historian yourself...
Works out super well. Every time.
It's
if you want to be a Greek city-state for 80 years, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say outside of those, doesn't work real well.
Really? So they want to direct democracy. They want to make up their own laws. And they're going to try to collapse the euro beginning this weekend.
Real quick, that could work because, one of the problems with direct democracy is ultimately the people with the most free time run the country. Because if you have a job, you don't have time to go online and write laws. But everyone in France only works 3 months a year. So that right. might, they might actually be able to make that work. That's right. possible
okay.
for them.
All right. So they're telling people, go in, take your euros out of your bank account and put it into cryptocurrency. They're saying that they like you to take everything out, but just take at least 20% out. If that happened, if you got 70% of France to take 20% of their money out and cash it out of euros, you could have a economic disaster on your hands all across Europe.
Are they trying to create a run on the bank? Or are they trying?
Yes.
And that's hopefully going to lead to the Correct. Collapse of the euro.
Correct.
I would be amazed.
Ambitious,
if
I would
France
say.
France became the champion of cryptocurrency yeah. and brought down the euro. That is not a prediction I had for 2019.
It's Mr. Robot Season 3. It yeah. happens, though.
Yeah.
Look for
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good, good.
I've got a plan for what France should do. Because
really?
When last I was reading about this with any great degree, at the time, I don't know if they've dealt with this, but at the time, the police were threatening to join the protesters. And at that point, mm-hmm. it's kind of game over. Because the only folks that are keeping marginal order in France are the police, because these have gone from protests to riot. There's a qualitative difference, right? So I thought, if I were Macron, what would I do? And I came up with a brilliant solution.
Okay.
As the government, you go on strike. That's right. You go, we're joining you. We agree. I, President Macron, I am going on strike. I am not going to work anymore. None of my cabinet's going to work anymore. We're with you. And then what happens? Who runs the country? And the answer to that is Germany. And I think that's ultimately what France needs to do is
right.
outsource its leadership to Germany for a
right.
while.
Right. You know, I think if our government went on strike.
They've done that before. They've outsourced their leadership to Germany before. It did not work out as well.
Third time's the charm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think,
yeah. If our government went on strike, if Trump and Pelosi and Schumer said, we can't agree on anything, but we're going on strike, I think the American people would cheer.
Yes, I think that could be a fairly popular thing.
Yeah, I think everybody would be like, okay, good.
Like all of Washington goes to the Florida Keys, just a bunch of museums for a while.
Right.
That could be a lot of fun.
Right. I think that would be a very good thing.
There are real issues with this shutdown, though, because, there are some serious things that are going on with it. Obviously, the people who are out of work, you have the mm-hmm. people, like these big parks closed, and there's businesses nearby that are, mm-hmm. Based on the traffic that mm-hmm. goes there. You have a flood insurance coming up for renewal. There's also food stamps. But I think the thing that might turn people around on this is, no longer can craft breweries get their labels approved by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which apparently they have to do. So no new varieties of craft beer coming into play. I think that could actually cause enough pressure to shut down the whole debate.
This is how long I've been an alcoholic. I first thought, when did Kraft, the macaroni and cheese people, start making beer?
Oh, man. Macaroni beer.
Yeah.
That sounds like a very popular, horrible idea for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, no, Wisconsin, we love beer, we love cheese, so macaroni beer.
It's three cheese beer.
The more you talk about it, the more intriguing.
Now I want it.
Okay, Safeway beer, that could be like kind of a good Viking thing.
They have beer cheese, which is delicious.
It's true, yeah. Okay.
This could be a thing. We may have just created a giant...
Somebody at Kraft is going, we are getting out of the macaroni and cheese business.
You're welcome.
Yeah, yeah. So if... because this is a serious thing with our economy, China's economy. If Europe would collapse, I'm doing this seriously with some of the war gamers that we talk to. Who are the allies and who are the Axis powers? I mean, if Europe would go into chaos, is there anyone within the sound of my voice that bets against Germany?
No. Germany kept an independent bank too. Like for years now, it's since the invention of the euro, we're like, yeah, just going to keep our bank just in case, in case something happens with the euro. So they can tomorrow, they're good to go. And also their economy. I used to live in the UK, and there's still a little bit of anti-German resentment. And some of the older folks are like, I thought we defeated these people and they've taken over because their economy is so good.
Their economy is good unless France and Italy and Spain and everybody else goes down. Their economy is what, 50 or 80% export to the euro zone.
Okay. Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
If that goes down, Germans are in trouble.
Would it necessarily follow that if the currency implodes, that the trade zone would as well?
Yeah.
So I think they could. I don't think they'd have
the
to
euro.
Do that.
No, they wouldn't have to. But the euro, as we would know it, would be over. That would just be. That's what they promised.
It would make
they
trading
promised,
more difficult for sure because you'd have to.
Yeah, they would all trade with each other. But the promise of the European Union is over. It's peace and prosperity. That's what they guaranteed. Well, I don't have either. So what are we doing in this?
Do we have an idea of how serious these things are when it comes to these protests? Because I think, like, you get that sense that, like, this happened many times with, like, Anonymous, and they would be like, in 4 hours, we're going to destroy Mark Zuckerberg's toilet. And you're like, and then it never happens. They and threaten Mark's... things all the time. He's still going potty in his toilet. Yeah. It's still working.
Right.
Do we know, like, is there, I mean... We're going to pull out 20% of our money and put it in Bitcoin to collapse the euro. Is that a legitimately threatening
thing? They have
thing?
70% approval rating.
That's kind of now, the scary part, right?
Yeah. So if, let's just say, Occupy Wall Street or Antifa had 70% of the country behind them, and then you had, in that 70%, you had another 70, 80% that was like, yeah, I don't have anything else better to do, but... just do whatever they say this weekend. If 70% of that 70% would go in and take 20% of their money out of the bank, that would be very harmful. They would, the French government.
Right, but that's an impossible ask, right?
Like, that's asking all the people to put their money where their mouth is, which is usually a division in polling.
Yeah.
Between like, hey, do you want more stuff? Yeah. Do you want higher taxes? No. Okay. Well, those are
right.
Irreconcilable.
Yeah.
But like when you're to poll people.
Yeah. When you're talking about collapsing the euro and collapsing the financial system, you know, I think there's just more people that are like, wait a minute. I'm not sure. Because that affects my paycheck, right?
Right.
That could affect.
How
could
do
affect
I cash
football
my...
games? Yeah. That could affect wine.
Right.
I do. It wouldn't surprise me if it brought down the Republic. Because we're on Republic 5.0, right? Like this, the last one, De Gaulle's the last one that started up, but they reboot a lot more frequently than we do. They're like an old computer.
Yeah, and it's not, and it's also not it's not just France. Remember, the yellow jacket thing has spread all over Europe, including England. So if you had a good portion of people, I don't think it's going to happen, but if you had a good portion of people do it this weekend, it could make a real run on the banks, and that's the last thing you want.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I'm reading about Jeff Bezos and his divorce from his wife, which is really sad. They've been together for how long?
25 years.
25 years. And they've had a great relationship, far as we know, on the outside. Had a great relationship. She's been there the whole time. Every time I've ever heard Jeff Bezos and his wife talk about marriage and things, now this is obviously years ago, they've always given the impression that they're real partners. And, you know, like I couldn't do what Tanya does. Tanya couldn't do what I do. Together, we can support each other and we make it together. And I don't know if it's like that with all marriages, but I've always gotten the impression with Bezos, it is like that.
Because she was around before Amazon. He was a millionaire. I believe it was 4 years after they got married.
Yeah.
He was first a millionaire. Remember, this guy is the richest man in the world. $147 billion of
so
net
she,
worth.
I think she, you make a great case that she absolutely deserves half of everything.
Oh, yeah. I think absolutely. Certainly, there's you don't have a prenup in that situation. They both had nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they came to the relationship without lots of assets, so they don't have a prenup. And, you know, you're talking $147
billion.
Billion. Billion.
He's the richest man in the world.
Mm-hmm. So she's going to be, you know, getting something like $73.5 billion, which
Jeez.
Is a lot to get.
Do you think you even fight over that? You're with somebody for 25 years. Do you think you even fight over that or just say, here's half?
You know, you hope it's like that. They did release a very nice statement. You know, our relationship is changing, but we'll still be friends type of thing.
Yeah.
Which indicates maybe it's, you know, I mean, he's going to walk away with $73 billion. He's still in a decent spot. It's more than I have by a significant amount.
It's more than how much, for instance, how much, let's compare him to somebody who has you know, $50,000 worth of wealth. So, you know, you might make $50,000, but, you know, you've got, you know, between what you have invested in your house and your car, if it was paid off, and a 401k, then she got around 50 grand.
Yeah, which is decent. Right? Yeah. Like, you know, depending on what stage of life you're in, that's right. A lot more than many people have.
Let's take his $174
billion. 147, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is him going out and going, oh, that's $1 million? Yeah, give me four of those. How much is $1 million to Jeff Bezos compared to somebody who has $50,000?
So if you have $50,000, wow. So he's $147 billion. $1 million to him is the same as 34 cents to someone who has $50,000.
Oh, my gosh.
34 cents.
Oh, my gosh.
That's incredible.
So you literally could go in, because if you have $50,000 and 34 candy is 34 cents a piece, you right. just go grab a handful. You might even put a bag full in there. Yeah. You're like, I don't care. Think of that.
Yeah. I mean, look.
You could go out and buy Bugattis, you know, like, yeah, give me one in every color and make a color up, too.
Yeah. You know come I mean? Up with a device that will create a new color never before seen by the human
right.
eye.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. We talk about someone with $50,000. Think about a normal, holy crap, that guy's rich person. Someone with $1 million. $1 million. A millionaire, right?
Mm-hmm.
To a millionaire. The difference between Jeff Bezos spending $1 million to a millionaire, that's like $6.80.
Oh, my
It's a value
gosh.
Meal, right? Like, it's an extra value meal. You wouldn't even think about it.
Oh, my gosh. So that goes back to, and again, you know, a best advice I ever got on money was somebody who said to me, how much is enough? Now, this is a guy, you know, who I think helped invent styrofoam. So he had a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know. And he said, you have to decide, because it will never be enough. If you're really successful, it will never be enough. And I remember saying to you when we first started out, you spend what you make.
Yeah.
It may seem like, oh, if I could just make $100,000, you're gonna be in exactly the same situation if you don't think about it.
And
going
really
in.
Plan and be disciplined.
Right. Otherwise, you're going to make $100,000. You're going to be like, I thought this was going to free my life up. No, you just bought more stuff.
Mm-hmm. The bills go up. The house gets a little bigger.
Correct.
You know, the car gets a little nicer. But still, you're still spending.
But if $1 million, if $1 million to Jeff Bezos is like $6 to a millionaire, doesn't it make it a little easier to go, yeah, she's been with me for 25 years. Take half.
Especially that, right?
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.